Can you hear Lloyd?
Yes.
Yes. Great. Thank you. All right. So we've got the slides pulled up already. Can you?
I do not see slides. I see you.
Okay. Let me see if I can. Yep.
I think that screen will be good, and then we'll just have to switch tabs to the, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, of course, it's right over the tabs.
All right. Are you seeing slides now?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I signed you out of the email, sorry. All right, so I'll let Natalie sign back in.
Do we even need to, or view only? Can we view and this might work. Is that working for you, Lloyd?
Yeah. I see you in kind of a small window. And then I see the slides in the big window.
And we're able to, okay. Swaggy. This isn't necessarily what we talked about, but are you cool with us advancing slides for you, Lloyd? Or do you want to?
I think I'd prefer to advance my own slides.
Okay. You can share your screen and then we can just reshare.
Okay. Can you make me a co-host, I guess? That might be the deal breaker as to whether
I'll ask the room support if
okay
they know how to do that.
Okay. Hi.
Ooh. Log into Zoom. Will we be able to make Lloyd a co-host? So he can advance his own slides.
Should be able to.
Let's see.
Can he not advance right now?
No.
Can you make him a host?
He can't share his screen. Well, I don't.
Well,
it doesn't give you an option now that I've stopped sharing to share your screen.
Oh.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
Yep. Okay. I can. As long as you stop. Okay. That works.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we'll just have it on. Let me turn over.
Let me just close all my other windows here. I just realized the University of Missouri Library's sign in there is probably Seth on another machine, right?
I'm not sure where that came from. Oh, actually, well, no. I don't have an SSO login for you. Huh. We don't need that.
Don't think.
Check into a
session. Oh, that might be somebody from. That's probably my coworkers, Lloyd. They're, they're watching remotely.
I see. Okay.
That's probably that's probably my department.
I thought maybe you had another laptop in the room there.
Yeah. No, they have a laptop set up back at the library.
I see.
I just forgot.
We don't check into our own session. Seth, I have my laptop here. I've got any up there for my slides. If you feel free to use this, if you want to go through anything.
Yeah.
Was super old and not survived the journey up here, and Chromebooks were on sale because of school starting. So So I snagged one for like 60-70% off or something. Yeah, it was crazy. It was like, okay. I was like, I can make that splurge right now. I was like, I can do that.
Virtual presenter for this one?
Yes.
Hey, I can actually turn this camera around.
Okay.
I'll get the remote. Is it only a virtual presenter for this session?
No, it's all three of us.
So then I'm not going to arrange it too much different, but whenever you guys are ready, just put that in my background. That way the recording picks up you guys as opposed to the audience. Okay. I'd like to show the virtual presenter somebody if we can.
Yeah.
Should be just fine.
Okay.
Nice. Absolutely.
We're still on CR. Work is distasteful. I love Lord of the Rings, but work is distasteful to me as well. But we used to be open catalog.
Yeah.
Yeah. I forget why it changed, but I guess we're still.
Well, I mean, OCR. Yeah, sure. I wonder if, yeah. Guess it makes sense.
Okay.
Not to work. He stays there for while he's talking and turn when you come.
Yeah.
All right, so we've got 10 past, Lloyd, if you're ready to get started.
Yeah, you guys ready in the room?
Yeah, we're ready to go.
Okay.
All right.
So I will get started then. I'm Lloyd Chittenden. We are presenting about open rules for cataloging. I am the past president of the Open Rules for Cataloging organization, and I'm presenting here with Seth Huber and Natalie Kasman, who are on our rules committee, actually writing our rules. And so we're going to be talking about open rules for cataloging. I'll mention that I am working from home here, so it is entirely possible that my daughter will butt into the video here. We'll see what happens. So why are we doing this? We are creating a new set of cataloging rules. Why do we need another cataloging standard? Aren't there too many already? And so we are doing this because we support open access, and we think that the cataloging rules that libraries use should be freely available and open access. They should be cheaper, and they should be more usable is another important characteristic of what we're trying to do here. Pretty much all the other cataloging guidelines that people use are already open access. ISBD is open access. The LC cataloging manual is open access. PCC recommendations are open access. Archives are open access. Rare materials are open access. OLAC is open access. MARC is open access. Wikidata is open. Everything else anybody might need to do cataloging is already open access except for the descriptive rules. And so we're trying to rectify that. This should reduce cost to libraries. Right now, the annual subscription price for RDA Toolkit is over $200 for a single user. And there's a lot of libraries that just can't afford that. And so we're trying to make something available for those libraries to use. Another aspect of what we're doing is we're trying to create rules that are a lot easier to use, more understandable. We're using clear language. We're not making up our own words. We're not making up concepts that people can't understand. We're including MARC examples within the rules. We're creating something for working catalogers to use, a very practical guide for working catalogers to use to create descriptive records. And the reason for that is because if catalogers can't access the rules because they can't afford them or they can't understand them, they will guess at what to do and they will make mistakes, and that's going to create inconsistent records in the systems that we're trying to use. And so by making rules that everybody can access and are easy to understand, we're hoping to create more consistency amongst the catalog records that people are creating. So, what are we doing? In 2019, the project was formed by Billy Albina, and it for a couple of years it was sort of just a Google group, and there were discussions and some talk about how to move forward. In 2022, they actually started to create a nonprofit group and started writing rules. They started with the series area and they started developing the website. In 23, we actually incorporated into an official 501c3 nonprofit organization, and we've published our first rules area, which was series area. In 24, we put up the title rules area and the edition rules, and we elected our first executive board. And then we renamed the core committee to the rules committee, and those are the people who are actually writing the rules. And then this year, we finished the draft of our imprint area rules, and we're working on addition next. That's almost done, the addition area. And then we'll continue with a few more areas before we're done with our first set of rules for describing books. Our vision is free and open cataloging guidelines for the library community with practical examples, easily understood models created by catalogers to empower catalogers. So we are trying to create something that is going to be practical for working catalogers to use. Our scope is that we are open access, free and accessible. We're following ethics and best practices. We want comprehensible and sensible guidelines. We're trying to be inclusive of all library communities. We're trying to be compatible with other metadata environments. Now, our examples are currently in MARC, but we're not limited to that. That's what we have the expertise to create at this time. But if we can get folks who want to volunteer to create examples for how our rules would fit into other data structures, we'd be totally open to that. But right now, we're doing MARC. We have that expertise. So we want to create a system where our data can be exchanged and reused within the current structures, like, you know, OCLC, other bibliographic utilities will work within, you know, library catalogs, just like any other catalog records. And so we are trying to be adaptable as things change. We are certainly open to moving in other directions, but this is kind of where we're starting out. We're kind of trying to get our feet on the ground, get started out, sort of going back to the beginning, basically. Principles we're following, common usage. We're using vocabulary that should be in accord with the majority of users, something that practically anybody who's doing cataloging is going to be able to understand and use. Representation, description should represent a resource as it appears. So we are talking about descriptive cataloging. We are not getting into, you know, controlled forms of names at this time. And I don't know that we will. We don't know what direction we're going to take after we're done with what we're doing. Right now we are just doing a book description. Accuracy, bibliographic and authority data should be an accurate portrayal of the entity described. So we are relying on transcription, recording data directly from the entity for the most part, unless it would hinder access for the user. Integration, descriptions for all types of resources and controlled forms of names. All types of entities should be based on a common set of rules to the extent possible. So our focus is to help people describe resources commonly encountered in public and academic libraries. We're not getting into rare materials or archival materials. We're not going into special media forms yet. At this point, we're just doing the most common type of materials that people are likely to encounter. And accessibility. We are trying to create rules which comply with international standards for accessibility. And we're, you know, the intent is to create rules that will lead to records which are also accessible. Those are our principles, and that's where we're coming from, why we're doing this. And next is Natalie Kasman, who is actually on the rules committee. And I'm going to stop sharing, and she can take over.
One moment. There we go. Hi again, my name is Natalie Kasman, and I'm going to talk about a little bit about our process for rules development. Both Seth and I are on the rules committee for open rules for cataloging, developing guidelines. I don't want that there. Okay. So we're all volunteers from a variety of libraries, state library consortiums. Let me get this small so you can see state libraries, library networks, public libraries, and academic libraries. Volunteers tend to rotate in and out depending on need and, of course, their own personal work workload. We currently have 11 members, but we're always looking for more. So if you're interested in learning more about the Rules Committee for Open Rules for Cataloging, please email Amy Hitchner. She's our chair. Her email is there. Or the general ORC account for your cataloging rules. And these links will be on the slides, these emails and these links. We follow the generally accepted practiced structure for elements within descriptive cataloging per IFLA that generally follows ISBD. So our main source for our element set is the 2011 edition of ISBD, and then secondarily PCC Core, BIBCO. Our outline of elements applies to non-rare book resources only currently. For our project, rare materials will never really be in scope because, you know, there's already open sources for that. However, other non-rare resource types may be added to our scope in the future. But for this preliminary rules development, we're focusing primarily on book resources. A draft outline of our elements, our title and statement of responsibility, those are actually published. A draft of them. We're actually currently working through community feedback on our title area. So an updated version of that draft will be available on our website after we finish going through those comments and altering our rules from suggestions as appropriate or not. We also have edition area up. And again, these are all kind of draft phases that are meant to be evaluated as we continue our rules development. We have imprint that we've finished our first draft of, that's publication, distribution, manufacturing, production, et cetera, as well as material description that we have not begun to work on quite yet. Content, media, and carrier types are something we're still discussing as rules continue to develop. And then series was the first one we actually posted. And again, you can, these links will send you to our draft rules. If you would like to go into our slides, you can see examples of those. And then we will be working on additional notes in the future. How our rules are made, we compare rules and definitions across codes. So we may use as resources things that are currently open, ALA cataloging rules, descriptive cataloging in LC, things like RDA, AACR2, those are under copyright. So we collect all to compare rules and definitions and see how long certain rules have been in place or how they have changed over time. And that's always interesting to see. And then, so we gather all that information into a spreadsheet. And then we convert them to Google Docs to edit and add examples. And we as a committee just go through these documents very meticulously, writing rules and then revising. Lots of discussion, lots of thinking back to practical application is what it always ends up coming back to. You know, what's a, let's say, new or untrained cataloger going to think when they're looking up these rules? What will they be? How will they be applying them? And then once the rules committee is happy with the draft rule set, it goes out to review to the following groups. First, it goes to our executive board and our tech committee. So it's an internal review. Then it goes to a board of reviewers with some people that have incredible insight, experience, and of course, comments and suggestions to make to us on our rules. And then it goes out to the broader ORC community for public comment. And then we go through those comments and revise as needed or discuss. And after each step in the review process, we deliberate again as a committee. Sometimes revisions are made to the rules. Sometimes we do more research through our various resources. Sometimes we get into debates. And then again, we always come back to the, okay, well, what is someone actually going to be thinking and inputting here? And then sometimes we decide that the original intent of the rule as written stands and the comment is not incorporated. Here's an example. Again, there's a link of our title draft, and that's just a quick screenshot of what it looks like on our webpage. So the idea is that it's current, practical, and collaborative. We seek out real-life examples from our very own library catalogs to illustrate the rules and demonstrate how elements are actually used in practice. We shy away from the theoretical. Like I said, if we start getting into two like philosophical, technical, theoretical debates, we lean heavily on the practical. Rules are not developed in a vacuum. We seek input from other professionals throughout the development process. We have an international team like that are inputting comments onto our into our rules, and so that's catalogers really from all walks of libraries all around the world inputting suggestions to how we develop our rules.
So wrapping up, I talk too fast. Please let me know. I won't be offended at all if you wave your hand or say slow down. So a lot of this will be repeats. We do have 3 draft rule sets available. We're reviewing title comments right now, and it's almost done, actually. The board is working on fundraising. We've seen a new board this summer. And we are a new OLF incubator as of this spring. We don't know what that means yet, but we're pretty excited about it. So up next, we hope to finish description imprint this year and then work on notes after that. We do think a book rule set could be completed next year. And the board is also working on a couple of things for us as far as copyright insurance and fundraising goes. And the long-term future is kind of, it depends, we think. I will say that Mark has been kind of a sticking point for us. We've had a lot of debate about examples just in that format. Everyone's had strong opinions about it, and we've had a lot of discussion about it. We are open to BibFrame as that becomes more prevalent and more widely adopted, along with other standards. As mentioned before, this is a basic monograph scope right now. We are open to serials, media, music maps, et cetera, along with translations. Someone has asked for a Portuguese translation already, but we haven't committed to that because the rules aren't done. And a lot of this will actually depend on what work users want and need and how it becomes adopted. And along with what volunteers can bring to it, because it is an all volunteer effort. So that will depend on where we go in the long term. So that's where we are, what we're doing right now. If you want to stay up to date, the first link is to our rule set and website, and the second is to the Google group for progress reports and so on. So that's it. Thanks. If you have any questions, we can take those now. Corey, I think you might have been first. Okay. I'm going to pass the mic around.
Can you hear? Oh, yes. Okay. So you mentioned copyright insurance. Can you elaborate on that a little bit? And I'm assuming it has something to do with maybe what license you're publishing your drafts under that I am unaware of. So can you talk about how you're, I'm assuming maybe it's insurance to make sure it is open forever, long term?
No. Well,
Okay.
Let me see, unmute here. We're trying to get in, we're looking into getting insurance. We're publishing as Creative Commons license, so it's open and available. We are trying to get insurance against the bus. Okay, online we can't hear the questions, please repeat them. Okay, so the question was what are we doing about insurance? And what we mentioned that we're getting copyright insurance, and what does that mean? Why are we doing it? And so the issue is that we're afraid somebody's going to sue us, basically. Not that we're actually infringing on anyone's copyright. We're being very careful to avoid infringing on anyone's copyright. But we're probably going to be stepping on some toes, and people might not be happy about that. And the reality is, if somebody sues you, it doesn't really matter if you're right or wrong. If you can't afford to defend yourself, you're going to lose. And so we're trying to get into a position where, if we have to, we can defend ourselves. And trying to get insurance is part of that.
Can you hear me? Yeah. I got just one question. And have you thought about expressing those rules as maybe an ontology or a vocabulary?
So the question is if we've thought about expressing our rules as an ontology vocabulary. You're good.
I think we can say the answer is no, because our intended audience is small libraries and so on who may not have the knowledge and expertise to interpret those. So this is meant to be a very practical and highly practical set of rules.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, on that about our target libraries, I mean, the reality is a lot of people are not hiring catalogers, are not training catalogers. People are just having to jump into a library catalog without any of the theoretical background that some new rules really require. And library schools also are hard-pressed to teach cataloging. So we want these to be very, very accessible to those people that are just thrown into their library catalog and expected to come up with the description.
Okay, thank you.
Another question?
Okay, so the target libraries are small libraries and they're going to be MARC records. Are you expecting these libraries to share their records with other libraries, and how do you expect it to mesh with the standards that are already out there?
Okay, so the question is about small libraries and sharing records. That will depend on the library, I think. If they use OCLC, we do hope to get a code for the standard that's equivalent to the RDA code that exists now. So if libraries are contributing, they should be able to continue to do that. And if they don't, then they won't. It's up to the library that adopts it.
Yeah, we actually did just apply for our own 040 subfield E code. So we are anticipating that these will end up in the same bibliographic utilities and catalogs with records created following other codes.
Yeah, I just have a question or some more details on the challenge you feel with using BibFrame and instead of MARC, and have you even done some basic conversions using the Library of Congress's MARC to BibFrame to see if that examples sort of are expressed as BibFrame?
Yeah, so the question is about BibFrame. I can address one if you want. So we came up against this in romanization, actually, in transliteration, because BibFrame treats that as a subset of a variant title. And that was where MARC really got in the way of our examples, because in OCLC, it'll give you two 245 fields, which isn't really legal, but it'll link them in its system way. So we did look at the BibFrame model for that. As far as conversions, I've experimented with it on my own just a little bit. But frankly, I don't have the time in my day-to-day job to give a lot of time to that right now.
I'm planning on some other experiments with BibFrame in my own cataloging at my institution. And that actually brings up an interesting point, because when we talk about practicality and utility, and there are, I mean, I'm sure you are all well aware, open access BibFrame resources. So I think that will be something we continue to talk about and develop. I think BibFrame, as far as other standards go, BibFrame is more on our mind than some other schemas like Dublin Core, even though we're interested in use in those fields. Again, these are for, right now, book cataloging and library environments. So MARC and BibFrame are our primary targets as far as utility. So I think that will be something that we continue to experiment with in the future, but kind of like everything goes back to our volunteer expertise. Lots of people are not practicing in BibFrame at all yet. You know, I happen to be lucky at an institution where they let us play as much as we want, but that's not always the case. So potentially, and you know, I can't say as far as a large project for open rules for cataloging, but I would, in my own little bit of research, I would be happy to see how it converts. Thank you.
If I could just jump in there, I would say that that's definitely something we'll be looking to in the future. But I would be very hesitant to, you know, actually create something we're calling authoritative examples based on, you know, an automated crosswalk situation. I'd want to have somebody in our group who actually had that expertise and really knew what that's supposed to be and how someone using BibFrame would actually use this. And that's just not expertise we've gotten yet.
Any other questions?
Yeah. I guess I was just wondering, as you were talking about volunteers and your volunteer expertise, sort of what kind of support you're getting from your libraries for this work, how they feel about that, how you feel about that, how your volunteer situation is. Like, what is that resourcing of volunteers like for you all, that experience?
Sure. So the question is about volunteer support and resourcing from our libraries. I have a manager who's very supportive of open access, so she is fully on board with me working on this. And that's my long experience. It's been very, very supportive from my supervisors and environment.
Ditto.
Yeah, I can say I work for Marmot Library Network, and they've been supportive of my participation with this because they're interested in, you know, using it as catalogers. And so, I'm sure it just depends entirely on institution by institution, and support for open source in general is going to be one of those factors that probably will lead people to support employees helping out with it.
I actually have, this might be a plug for the rules committee, but my institution is supportive because, you know, we support access initiatives, right, in general. I come from an academic library. We are, you know, we work in RDA. We can afford an RDA toolkit subscription. So we aren't, you know, we aren't utilizing these rules in our day to day. But it's an access initiative that, you know, as librarians, we're passionate about. And then also working on the rules committee, and this is where this is kind of a plug, talking through these rules with my colleagues, thinking about practical application for different library types, different patron types. I feel like has really shaped up so much of my own cataloging and my own work, and you know, I think has made me a better cataloger, and hopefully will make our users better catalogers as well. You know, however they might be cataloging for their institutions. Yeah.
So you mentioned OVRC can be helpful for people who don't have the training for cataloging. So technically speaking, how do the rules in OVRC are different from RDA that makes it more simple or more helpful to people who don't have the training or the skills?
So the question is about org's difference between RDA. That's a good question. I think I would say there are fewer options. There's less judgment required. You really have to have experience and expertise to know how to make those judgments. And we aren't assuming our users would have that. There's also no theoretical model to worry about, which could be a plus or minus depending on what you think. Those are the two things that I would say are judgment and the no underpinning theory.
I would say that one primary difference is we are not trying to create a hypertext document. We are not expecting people to jump around to different parts of some complex structure. We're just writing text. It's simple text. And, and so I think that's going to be a lot easier for someone to deal with. I'd say that's another primary difference.
Hi. So would you say, I guess with the rules and thinking about no theory, like one of the things that's kind of underpins RDA is sort of like the WEMI model of works, expressions, manifestations, and items. And it's sort of like, it makes me think when I think about the philosophical discussions, is this organization of information something that was discovered and came up organically or something that we're trying to impose upon the world? And it sounds like the way you're approaching this is maybe more of the AACR2 model of like, you've just got this thing and you're going to describe it and you're not necessarily worrying about how it relates to a larger organization of knowledge. It's more like, this is the book in hand and this is what you need to do so that people can find it.
Yeah, so the question was about theory and WIMI and Ferber and how we approach that. I think that's a fair assumption. I mean, I think that's a very fair thing to say about how we're approaching this, is that it's a manifestation level. You have this book on your desk. What is it and how do you describe it? I think that's a fair way to put it. And I may be wrong about that. Yeah, so the question is about after print books. It depends. If we have a user community that needs open rules for other formats, then we'll move on to that. If there's no stated need or expertise in developing rules for that, then we'll let it lie as it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think DVDs, not to say that this is necessarily where we're going next, but that's a thing to keep in mind too. Like, so classic cataloging of DVDs, you got to watch the dang thing. You know what I mean? And a lot of people don't have the time to do that. Not that you have to sit there and watch a 2-hour movie and eat popcorn while you catalog, as much as I wish I could. But people don't have the time to do that. People don't even have disk drives at their desktop sometimes anymore. So again, thinking about user need and practical application for our rules will guide our next steps. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think that we'll probably, if we start looking at media at that point, we'll probably, get into discussions with OLAC and see, I think there's already OLAC guidelines covering that area. Mm-hmm. And, it'll be a decision which we'll have to make, and probably in consultation with OLAC people, for example, about what's the direction for that to go in. We do have a question in chat, which is, with BibFrame built with those theoretical models in mind, do you anticipate any problems using ORC in a linked data environment? And I'd be interested what Seth and Natalie have to say. I would say I don't know yet. I'd say it's too early to say how that's going to work. And again, we're going to have to bring in people who have that expertise and to have that discussion. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think I would add to that by saying that this is, I think, where not having rules about authority work is going to hurt us a little bit, because we won't have a way to establish relationships and define those relationships that linked data relies upon. So that's a shortcoming that I think we might want to address, actually.
I love bibliographic control more than almost anything. Existing in a linked data environment is all theoretical right now. We don't know what that's going to look like. We don't know if that is going to be something that everybody is, like, the ideal is that everyone would be participating, right? But we don't know that that's going to be the practical. So, I mean, we'll continue to develop our rules. And then, like we mentioned with one question earlier, you know, if we have the expertise on our team to do some more experimenting in a linked data environment with these rule sets, we will be happy to do so. But currently, it's not necessarily in our immediate scope, I would say, if that's accurate, Lloyd.
Yeah, that sounds right.
You're probably going to have to repeat my question, too. Okay. I'm just kind of following up. I was thinking about the same thing about different media types, changing environment, giving time to get these rules out there. So a lot of libraries use vendor wrappers. Yeah. Have you thought about maybe creating like a cheat sheet for how to go about, you know, reviewing those to make sure that the data is accurate? Because I know that a lot of that data is not accurate. But what are the fine points? That might be a good publicity angle for you to kind of promote your
rules. Yeah, so that was a question about reviewing vendor records and creating a checklist. I think it's a great idea. We haven't thought about it, but that's definitely a good idea. Vendor records are mostly junk, so that's a very good idea.
I have the discussion all the time within my libraries, but with people in general about, you know, this goes back to not having training, not having resources for catalogers to teach catalogers how to catalog in the way that we're expected to, in the way that who we would like to provide accurate and appropriate description and access to our materials. And, you know, we constantly have, I know in my library, you know, if something needs to be done in GovDocs or serials, or, you know, CERC needs to quick catalog something and then something needs to be checked, there are constantly people who are not classically trained catalogers, like checking records or, you know, touching records or whatever in a MARC environment. And I am always like, well, you need to know how to do something right to know when something is wrong. When you're looking at these records. So that is a very, very good point. Thank you for that, because I think that's a great idea to have like that little checklist that you don't have to read through rules and rules and rules. You can just pull up that document. Thank you.
So you have 2 minutes left if anybody has any last questions. Okay, I guess we'll call it. Thanks so much for coming.
Thanks, Lloyd.
Thanks.
Thank you.